Yeah, I was just going to chime in with something pretty similar. We started a program several, well, five, 6 years ago now. We called the Youth Radio Project. We go actually for high school kids mostly. And we have a teacher who's got a background check and everything who works with the kids and gets them trained up. And now a few years in, we're actually seeing some of those folks coming back, albeit sometimes just during summer times when they're, now that they're in college, they're coming back, but they're, some of them, are now regular DJs. And so that's been great and a little bit of a pipeline for much younger, DJs as well as listeners, because those shows are fairly popular. I do want to just, my other question was for the last presenter, but it could be kind of for anybody. And it's a little bit around fundraising, and the fund drives and just, I was really impressed with some of the success that Mike just described there in Kansas City. And just any advice on building, you know, dedicated listenership to certain shows and having that really show in the fund drives. And with that, I'll mute myself.
Okay, thank you. And I also, you know, Mike, KYGT in Colorado recently called up and said they would like to have a whole roundtable dedicated to that topic of how to bring in the next generation of listeners. So, you know, we'll be probably asking you to come back to talk this over at another roundtable, and the rest of you in this roundtable right now, if you feel you would like to discuss that further, let me know. And yes, that includes you, Sharon, having had a lot of success in that area. So anyway, that's going to come down the pike. So we're going to move on to Alan Bloom. We're switching gears a little bit here to a music producer instead of a manager. We have just a few music producers here presenting. So Alan Bloom is from a show which I personally love. We brought it onto KHOI here in Ames, and it's a syndicated Spanish-English music program called Classical Tones from KBBF, Santa Rosa, California. Alan, you want to take it away?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. I'm with KBBF. The BBF stands for Bilingual Broadcasting Foundation. It's the oldest bilingual community radio station in the country. The foundation started in 1971. We went on the air in 1973 and have been on the air continuously since then. One comment about the previous conversation that I hadn't thought of is in the early days of KBBF, we managed to train up a lot of announcers, and then once they got trained up, they'd quit and go off and start working at a commercial radio station. So KBBF ended up training announcers for a lot of the Spanish language stations back in the 70s. Right now we're trying to do more community affairs programming and news, but there still is a lot of music. In particular, my show is a classical music show, but by the way, my background is I was the producer and technical guy for WESU, which is a radio station of Wesleyan University about 50 years ago. And one summer I worked as a professional announcer at my hometown station of WGET. And then I wasn't involved in broadcasting for many years until a few years ago I got involved with KBBF. I got started just to kind of practice my Spanish, and it kind of snowballed from there. So my show is called Classical Tones. And I think I was thinking that there's basically, if you define success as getting a lot of other stations to pick up the show on AudioPort, which is kind of what happened, then I think there's three keys to success. One is longevity. You have to be uploading your show for a long period of time. It starts out, else is going to be uploading it. But if you do it like a once weekly show like mine and do it reliably, eventually you'll get people starting to pick it up. So that's the first point. The second point is having interesting content, and I'll talk about that. And then the third point is having good production values. I think that's especially important for a classical music show. So let me start off with the longevity and reliability of uploading the show. When you first start uploading it, it's going to take time for other stations to start carrying the program. Classical Tones actually started as an on-air show back in 2012. And then in 2017, I started pre-recording it. and uploading it to AudioPort. And as I say, there was very little intake at first. It took some time to catch on. Today, in addition to KBBF itself, there's about a dozen stations that seem to be uploading the show every week manually, plus three more that do it automatically, apparently for podcasts. So it looks like there's about 16 stations carrying the show right now. And I do want to point out that reliability is very important. If you start missing shows or posting them late, then you're going to start losing your customers. The second point is interesting content. Each show, I think, needs to kind of have a hook. I mean, there's lots of classical music shows on the air, but the trick about classical tones is that each piece has some kind of Latin connection. Our tagline is classical music with a Latin connection. So all the music has some connection to either Spain or Latin America, typically the composer or the performers or some other connection, like Aaron Copland wrote a piece called El Salón Mexico, so there's the Latin connection. So that, it was kind of interesting when I first started doing the show. The most fun part of it was doing the research. I've been a classical music fan all my life, but when I started doing the show, I started researching Latin American classical music composers and Spanish classical music composers, and there's a lot of them out there that I had never heard of who wrote some wonderful music. And I was able to highlight that on my show. A lot of the music is stuff that you rarely hear on other classical music stations. Each piece is preceded by a minute or so of anecdotes and other information, first in Spanish and then in English. And when you do that kind of thing, I remember back when I was in college, I had a classical music show, and I was told, don't just get on there and read the liner notes. That's really boring. You need to do some research and come up with some interesting stuff to say about it. And that's what I've tried to do. Publicity, you need to publicize the show somehow. And the only way I've done that is on AudioPort itself. The program story, you know, the description of the program which is the same every week, I post in the notes section, of the upload. And, then the advertising the particular show of that week is done in the summary section. And then I also upload a script every week. Since my show is scripted, I read a script in Spanish and English. I upload that to AudioPort every week. I don't know if any of the stations are using it. And I also upload a link to the Spinitron data because I figure out the times and all that information for Spinitron. And since I have to do it for my own station, I upload that data to Dropbox, and so people can download it, and all they have to do is change the start time and they can reuse the data. Again, I'm not sure if anybody's actually using it, but I've been doing that every week. And the final thing that I think is important, especially for a classical music show, is having good production values. I don't consider myself the world's best announcer, but Audacity is your friend. I guess everybody knows what Audacity is. It's a free program for editing sound files. So what I do is, the trick is to listen carefully to each voice segment that I have recorded. And it's really nice. If I make a mistake, it's really easy to re-record it. And you can edit out clicks and pops and noise. I use Audacity's noise reduction feature just to reduce the background noise, since I'm just recording this at my home. So there is a fair amount of background noise, and Audacity does a pretty good job of getting rid of that. I do use a modest amount of compression on the voice parts to keep the volume level kind of constant. And the other thing I do is classical music has quiet passages. And if a particular piece ends in a quiet passage, I don't want the announcing voice to come on at full volume because it sounds like you're screaming. So I use Audacity to kind of vary the volume so that it corresponds with the particular music. That would be less of an issue with popular music because most popular music kind of plays at a constant volume throughout the entire song. But for classical music, that's kind of important. Another point is, and I learned this years ago, you know, in the early days of radio, the announcers talked like this. You know, we were told to talk from your diaphragm. And I kind of think that's a bad idea. It sounds fake. I think it's much better just to sound natural. Another thing about announcing is rhythm and cadence. Part of that's just the way you record it. And then also the time delay between your announcement and the start of the music and so on, you can easily adjust that with AudioPort. So the trick is to listen and kind of make it so that it sounds good, make it so that it sounds reasonable. And the only last point, by the way, I'm an engineer, so I kind of obsess about the technical aspects, so forgive me for that. The final point was people really obsess about microphones. They figure you got to spend $1,000s on a microphone to get something that sounds good. And in my opinion, what's much more important than the microphone is the room acoustics. You don't want to be able to hear the room, so to speak. And there's a whole, you know, you could go on for hours talking about that, but don't be afraid to use an inexpensive mic. The mic I use is an old Radio Shack boom mic that I think I paid $35 for or something many years ago. And people are astonished when they find out what I'm using because it sounds like a professional microphone. So you can use Audacity to vary the equalization and that kind of thing if you have an inexpensive mic. So don't worry about that. So that's pretty much all I had that I was going to present. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Val. There is a question from Robert. What are ways to train for quality in live shows? Do you have a comment about that?
Yeah, we have a regular training program that our program director does. I don't remember how many hours it is. That is a good idea to have an hour where you have beginning announcers, probably late at night, where you're not going to lose too many listeners. My show is actually fairly late at night, mainly just because we figure that classical music is not the most popular thing. But yeah, I don't know what the details are about announcing. They do have a whole session on Audacity, so you can, for producing your own show. And announcing, we have a whole regular training program for that, but I'm not exactly sure what it involves.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Alan, thank you. And
there was a question from Jim, too.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Really interesting. I went to Wesleyan, too, so it's sort of fun to hear somebody talk about that. I'm just curious your thoughts about classical music because, and it's amazing to hear a Latin connection to classical music. That was really interesting. But how do you see classical music in general? What can we do to take advantage of the fact that there are still millions of people who love to listen to classical music in the United States? And it seems that, as you know, I'm a New Yorker, so I've watched the stations disappear. I remember when NCN disappeared years ago and there's only QXR left. But what do you think we can do? What can be done to make classical music shows more interesting in general?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. There used to be two commercial classical music stations in San Francisco when I first moved there in 1979. One of them changed formats, and then the other, when the station decided to change formats, they kept the classical aspect of it and made it a nonprofit community station. I think there's still a lot of classical music listeners out there, but, you know, part of the problem is it's all kind of old music. So most of the listeners already have their own music collection. So I think one of the things I do in my show is try to present music that I think a lot of classical music listeners are not familiar with, because there's a lot of this outstanding music out there that doesn't normally get played. So I think maybe that's the key, is to have a hook like I do. Latin music with a Latin connection, so that you can play some stuff that people aren't used to listening to. And I give a little bit of interesting information about each piece before I play it, which is something that you don't get on just Spotify.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, I'm going to have to leave. I got something that came up, so I would like, this is a great program, and I'd like to listen to the other presenters, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Alan. Thank you. And I'm going to, my apologies, to Indra. I'm going to jump for a minute to Grant because he has to leave in a few minutes, if that's okay, and, allow him to speak now, and then we'll go back to our regular schedule. So Grant, you want to go ahead? I know you have to leave very shortly.
Appreciate that, Ursula. And sorry, Indra, for jumping the line, but hi everyone, my name is Grant Parks. I'm the general manager at KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico. We've been having a lot of music programming on since the very beginning of the station. We've been broadcasting for 32 years, and the majority of the time we've had more music shows than we have had talk shows, not for necessarily lack of wanting news and public affairs shows, but as we see over the trend of a long time, it's more difficult to actually keep news and public affairs programmers than it is to keep music programmers. Some of that is attributed to sometimes the research that goes into producing a news and public affairs program. So we'll talk about that later on in the future. But what we have taken from our programming in general is that it's very personality driven. We have some DJs that are very good technical DJs and they sound great, you know, no dead air, no hiccups or anything like that. But they don't necessarily garner the same amount of pledge drive donations and streams as it relates to Nielsen and Arbitron than, say, someone with a larger personality that exists outside of the station as well. Being that we are volunteer-based, like most of the stations here at this meeting, everyone has everyone's got a main job they're doing. And some of those main jobs tend to be more in the limelight than others. Some of them are customer service. And so they're seeing people more often. So therefore, when a listener comes into the shop of the bike store owner that has a show on the station, there's naturally conversations that spark there and it's sort of butterfly effects. And our personality driven is consistent with some of the trends that we've been seeing. What we've noticed is that someone who is on regularly, say, if they've been on every Tuesday at 3 p.m. for the past 20 years, they are getting more sort of likes and follows on social media. They're getting more listeners, as we can see by the Nielsen Arbitron ratings, than we are from programs that jump around often. As I mentioned, we've had one program that's been on Tuesday for a very long time, but then we've had other programs that have, say, jump time slots where they started on a Monday, then they moved to a Saturday, and now they're on a Wednesday. And what we found is that the listeners don't necessarily travel with the program. We do have the archiving of our broadcast available, so the fans can still listen back. But we found that the listeners don't travel with the DJ as they move time slots as much as you would think. You know, say we want to boost 7:30 p.m. listening on a Tuesday, we don't want to take the 3 p.m. Friday guy because he has the most listeners and move him over to Tuesday nights. It doesn't necessarily translate that way. And we've also got a lot of DJs who have shows once per week. And then we have DJs that have shows every other week. And so we've also noticed that the shows that have the alternating hosts don't get the same amount of listenership as in that time slot as the ones who are on every single week in their respective time slots. So say there's two people sharing 3 o'clock on Wednesday. What we found is that they don't get as many listeners as compared to a DJ that's on 3 p.m. every Thursday, if that makes any sense. And you might have questions about that I can air at the end. One of the things that we did during COVID in an effort to get new programmers, because we also had a lot of programmers leave during COVID because they either didn't feel safe coming to the station, they either moved out of town. We all know the familiar scenarios. What we started to do is create what we call an offsite programmer. And that's different than a programmer who gets to be live in the studio doing their show. What the offsite programmer is someone who then produces a show offsite using their own equipment and then sends that to us via Dropbox to be implemented into our program rotation by our program assistant. Sorry, by our production assistant. And what we found is during COVID, it was a great way to get new people into the studio without having what we call super subs, where a show has a new programmer every week, where that time slot, say it's 5 p.m. on a Saturday, has a new programmer every week. So you'll get 4 to 5 different DJs in a week. So instead of bringing current programmers and adding them to new time slots, we found that this offsite programmer procedure allowed for us to get people on the radio who are new and who won't be able to do the in-person training now that COVID has ended and that we've started doing in-person trainings again. Because of some people's schedules, it makes more sense for them to be able to pre-record and put it on the radio. The long-term goal of this offsite programmer is that will be able to fill our midnight, 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. time slots with these pre-recorded programmers, with new people who are coming into the training, and we don't have the availability for 7 p.m. on a Saturday or a 1 p.m. on a Thursday. This still allows new programmers who are certified or who have been approved for an offsite programmer to get their content on the radio and then not have to show up at 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. This also allows our underwriting department to sell more spots. Those spots wouldn't be priced the same as our 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. like we saw with WMNF, and those rates would be different as we see that the trends show that the listenership's different at 2 a.m. than it is at 2 p.m. That's pretty standard, though. And I mentioned the offsite programmers and how that process went about. We basically created a manual, a one-sheet manual for them explaining how the process is going to be laid out. We have someone from the station send you what your underwriting script is and what the promos you have to play 4 days ahead of time for you to have it into us 2 days before your broadcast date. And then we also created a second one sheet that has a how-to of suggested microphones to use, suggested avenues to send it to Dropbox, and suggested audio softwares to use. I believe someone was mentioning Audacity earlier. That's our go-to as well, as it's very universal and it's free. And if you want to add extra effects on there, you can use that VST plugin to add, you know, more high-grade effects to what you're doing. So that's how it works for people who can't, who don't want to be live in the studio or can't be live in the studio. But we started our in-person training and certification process. We restarted that very recently, and that's as simple as attending a orientation with myself and a program committee member for an hour. We give you the 411s on station policy, FCC policy. Then we have the folks do a 1 or 2 1-hour trainings with me, so you can learn how the equipment works. And then they have to do 8 hours of shadowing, where they sit in on other DJs who are currently on the air, sit in on 8 hours worth of their programming, so that then the potential programmer can learn the ropes and learn some tips and tricks from folks who have been here for a very long time. Ideally, no bad habits are picked up throughout that process. But then the final part of this training process is they do a one-on-one certification process with me, so that then they can now apply for a program slot to our program committee. In keeping with the trends of music and the things that people want to hear, we engage in listener surveys about every 2 years to figure out if there's genres people want to hear that we're not playing or what we're playing too much of, and just to get general feedback. We often talk at meetings like this about how to get younger listeners. You bring younger DJs on. And when I say younger, in the scenario that KZFR is in, we're bringing on younger DJs, and our younger is 20s and 30s. We do have a youth-oriented initiative where we try to get folks from various departments at our local high schools to have programs on the air, but we also are shooting for 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds to be on the radio for multiple reasons. One of the main reasons I found is that when KZFR started 32 years ago, almost everyone who started was in their 30s and 40s. Now that we are on for 32 years as a 35-year-old general manager, and throughout my time here since I've been 23, I've been bringing on interns and new programmers that are around my same age. With that type of programming is a youthful voice. And even if they're not playing new music per se, that youthful voice is a nice change for our listeners. One of the new things that we've done at the station is have create a 90s hip hop show. It's a 1-hour program that we have on Thursdays. And that 1 hour hip hop show is serving the audience of 30-year-olds who are now young professionals and 40-year-olds who are professionals as well, who grew up listening to that type of music. When they were in college listening to the radio, these are the tunes that were on. So the music of the 90s is considered vintage and classic now. So that's something that we're definitely leaning into. And one of the other notes I'll lead on is when it comes to the music that we do here, we've had a long-standing live music show where bands come in and perform, whether it's a full band setup, whether it's just a singer and a microphone, or just an acoustic guitar and a singer that way. We've been having this live music show be going on for a very long time now. And during COVID, when they weren't able to have live performers, what we were able to do is use audio that we recorded from some of our many concerts that we've had and then play some of that on the radio. So when we weren't able to have live people in the studio, we were still playing live recordings from KZFR fundraisers, and we're also having that live music time slot be a very big home for local musicians as well. Our local musicians and local bands always see a bump when they come onto that live music show. So that's one of the ways we keep it fresh and we keep it new. And that's how we do some of our trainings, both in person and with our offsite programmers. And, you know, the big takeaway is that it's really personality driven here. And that's how we exist at KZFR. Does anyone have any questions? I know I just threw a lot at you real fast.
I don't have a question, just a request. Just for when they send out the PowerPoint slides, could you send those remote broadcaster primer sheets as well?
Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
I'll just jump in here on that too and say, if you guys want to send those to me, then I can distribute them to everyone else. I'll put my email in the chat again.
Okay, thank you, Grant. That was a lot in a nutshell. You got through it quickly and efficiently. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate your time, y'all. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I see one hand from Sharon, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay, sure. Go ahead.
Hey, cool. Thanks for your time. That was excellent. All the presenters have done a really good job today. It's very helpful. So thank you, Ursula and Stephanie, for organizing as well. My question, it was really interesting to me to listen to the certification process that you all have at your station. And I was wondering, because we're kind of doing a similar thing and wanting to get people to train and shadow before we determine if they actually get a radio show. But I'm wondering, you know, after they commit so much time, like at your station, it's at least 8 hours of shadowing on top of all the other stuff. Do they kind of feel like do they expect that they'll get a show at the end of that process? And how often, you know, do they not get a show? And then does that create any, you know, tension for you, or is it just, that's the business?
That is a good question. One of the things that we've found is that we lay out our entire process of how we do it at that new programmer orientation. So ahead of time, they know that they're going to be in for 8 hours. They're going to be in for at least two 1-hour trainings. And so that new programmer orientation really sort of weeds a lot of people out who don't have the time commitment. A lot of people do just think that they'll come in and they'll have a radio show like next week. And so what we found is that out of, say, 20 people that attend this new programmer orientation, you might have 2 that follow all the way through. And how long it takes those 2 to finish is sometimes 3 months and sometimes it's a year. So we don't really have too much of a problem with compacting the schedule, with having people who are newly certified with nowhere to go. Because once they're certified, we also allow them to work as substitutes for other programmers when they like go out of town. And so that's also a good way for them to build their chops up and get familiarity with our operating board and our procedures before they put in that program application to be Steve at 2:30 on Wednesdays, for example.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. No problem.
We also have a question from Craig.
Shoot, Craig.
Can't hear you, Craig.
Are you there, Craig?
Craig?
It's your moment.
Mute, Craig.
Craig is struggling with technology.
You can type your question in the chat if that works better. I can say it for you.
Okay.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Am I on now?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I just had to change my mic. I have a question. It's for Grant and for all of us, really, and that is, you know, like, what is, does anyone know, because I'm a programmer for a music program and for a public affairs program, what is the data on radio listenership for young listeners? I'm the father of four children, 32 years old to 11, and none of them listen to the radio ever. So, I wonder, do young people even listen to the radio, and are we barking up the wrong tree trying to get young people to listen to our programming? And in the case like Alan, who has a classical program, or myself, and the station that I'm on that focuses a lot of music program on jazz music, what is the hope of bringing on younger listeners?
So my opinion on getting the younger listeners is they will tune in. Will it be on 90.1 FM on a terrestrial radio? Maybe not, but they'll listen on their phones and they'll listen via the streams when the content they want to hear is right. The person who we just had on the radio from 11:30 to 12:30, he's the example I used of people who are playing, or he's playing 90s hip hop music. And so there are people that follow him on social media that are tuning in just to hear him. And those people that are tuning in are within his age group. So there is, I do feel like there is some hope as well, especially as I see some stations like WTJU out in Charlottesville, they're creating a podcast collective. And so now they're creating sort of a radio grounded product that is existing in like the multimedia world. The basics of podcasting, sorry, a successful podcast is following a lot of the same basic principles of a great radio show, good announcing, consistency from show to show, the serialability of the show from program to program as the topics grows. And so I haven't lost all hope yet, but it's really getting them to listen to what they want to hear, and also having the DJs be the curators to something new for them.
Okay, Bruce, did you want to say something real quick? I want to move on here as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the question, do the music shows have call-ins, or it's pretty much not call-ins?
So at any given time, we have the option to have people call in to be live on the radio, but then we've got a secondary option for people to call in and make requests. The call-in and request is pretty common, but using the same example I just gave with a 35-year-old DJ playing 90s hip-hop music, everyone was sending their request to him on his social media and on his text phone. So there is always that possibility for live call-ins, but the engagement isn't directly through station phones anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, Grant, and thank you for sticking around. You're 4 minutes late, so see you next time. See you next time. It's great to see you again. Okay, Indra, is up next. And by the way, Grant was with, KZFR in Chico, California, where I had a great evening in a hot tub once. So anyway, Indra is from KGNU, one of our longest standing affiliates in Boulder, Denver, Colorado. Thank you, Indra.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's really great to hear from so many other stations. And yeah, thanks for having me today. So yeah, my name is Indra Raj. I am the music director here at KGNU. I've been in this position for 5.5 years now, which feels like a lot to me, but is small potatoes compared to the other people who are involved at this station, for many of them for several decades. So there's quite a legacy here. I did put together a very simple PowerPoint presentation, so I will share that, or I'll share my screen so we can all look at that. Let's see here, slideshow. Okay. So we're located in Boulder, Colorado, is our main station and where we were born in 1978, but we broadcast all over the Front Range of Colorado, in Denver, Fort Collins, Colorado Springs even a bit, and many of the mountain towns as well. We've been on the air for 44 years. Next year will be our 45th anniversary, which is very exciting. And we have a main office and studio in Boulder, where the majority of our operations and staff are. But we also have actually a new studio location and office in Denver at the Buell Media Center, which is really great because, as you may know, this area of the country is growing rapidly, lots of new people coming in. And when they're looking to connect with community radio, a lot of them are in Denver, and it's more convenient for them to try and do shows there or interact with people there. So that's a big part of our mission. And we have had, I think we've been in Denver for almost 15 years now, in terms of having a physical studio there. We have news and music programming weaved together throughout the day. And, you know, part of the original mission, I've been told, and it rings true today, is to have people involved in the news and also kind of bring them into the music all along one line as much as we can. And there are great things about that and challenges as well, which I'm sure many of you can relate to. And then I just put our mission statement here if you want to read through it, but important things to note is that we're independent, we're non-commercial, we focus on, you know, ideas and music that have been overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented by other media outlets, and, you know, we are committed to excellence in programming as much as we can be. So just our music programming at a glance, we have 34 different music shows that go throughout the week. They span all genres and styles, you know, everything from classical to hip-hop to reggae to bluegrass to DIY noise music. We have specific genre shows for all of them. And some other folks have mentioned, I think the first presenter said, they put their, they have block programming kind of based so that a genre flows from one show, flows into the next. And the music director previous to me did a really good job in making sure our schedule was sort of similar. So for example, on Monday nights, we start with opera into classical music into modern composition. On Wednesdays, we do all international music, starting with a Celtic music show into general world music and then into a reggae music show, and so on and so forth. We have over 150 active music volunteer DJs here at KGNU, so a lot of my job is herding cats and making sure people are just have the information they need and the tools they need to be able to do their shows. But we're very fortunate to have such a large active volunteer community within the music department and on the air. You know, there's not a lot of rules about our programming, except we do emphasize to all of our programmers that we are focused on non-commercial, underrepresented artists and sounds from all genres and all over the world. And we really try to emphasize local music here as much as we can. There's a lot of great, diverse local music that happens here in the Front Range, and we really try to bring those people in and highlight those sounds and ideas and people as much as we can. Our DJs have control over what they play. I generally guide people when it comes to successful programming and mission alignment from time to time, but we really are committed to making sure our DJs have autonomy over what they play. And we encourage our hosts to focus on the music during their shows and putting together cohesive and flowing sets of music with thoughtful segues. That's, to me, what distinguishes a radio show, a really great radio set of music, from just throwing on a Spotify playlist. And we really try to emphasize the human curation aspect here at KGNU as one of the values for our listeners. So I'm just going to focus today on some of the things that I think help our programming be successful. And one of those things for me, one of the things that I heard a lot of when I first started this position from volunteers and meeting with them and kind of what they're looking for, is that they really want access to new music that's curated for them, that, you know, they're not just searching for it all by themselves. So I dedicate a lot of time every week to making sure I'm going through digital music submissions and physical music submissions and adding new music to our library every single week. And this is across all genres because, as I said, we have shows across every single genre of music. So it's a lot of work, but it helps maintain our library, keep it fresh. It helps streamline our sound because people are grabbing new music from the same place. It sort of guides people on what music is sort of appropriate for KGNU airwaves. And we have a physical new bin, we call it. But we also, when COVID began and people were less able to come to the studios, I started creating a digital download every week of the new music ads in a weekly newsletter that I provide. And that has been really popular with DJs. It's allowed them to grab that music on their own from home when they're show planning. We did a lot more pre-recorded programming during COVID and have scaled that back as people can do more live shows, but we still have people who pre-record, and that's very helpful for them as well. As I just mentioned, I do a weekly newsletter to my DJs and volunteers. Every Friday, I send out a newsletter with information, what do they need to know that week, what's going on at the station, COVID policies and updates, everything from that to this event is happening or we have a fun drive coming up. Any sort of message that needs to go out, I include in that. And also like links to our concert series, links to the digital download, what our charts look like, DJ tips, all sorts of things like that. It's proved to be a really effective way for me to reach more than 150 people every week with messaging and make sure we're all on the same page as much as possible. I'd say a huge success for us is just having, as I said, a studio in Boulder and in Denver. It allows more people in our area to be involved. They don't have to travel as far to be on the airwaves. So that has been really great. We also have show collectives. So, you know, we have 34 programs and over 150 DJs who are on the air. So we've created collectives for every show that we have. So, for example, our bluegrass show on Saturdays, Old Grass, New Grass, we have a collective of about 6 or 7 DJs who DJ that show. For that particular show, it works best to have this, you know, one DJ A does first Saturdays, DJ B does second Saturdays, DJ C does third Saturdays and even months, something like that, so that we have a regular schedule, and that really helps with organization and just making sure everyone has set times and the schedule. We don't miss shows, and we almost always have live hosts, which is the next point. We try to have live hosts whenever possible. As I said earlier, kind of the human curation is really important to us, but human connection is also really important. So much of radio these days is completely pre-recorded. You can't reach the DJ. You can't communicate with who's on the air. So we really want to make sure people can call us in the studio, email us in the studio, and actually, you know, someone will pick up the phone or email you back. People really enjoy that connection. One thing that's been really good for us in recent years is during our fun drives, we try to ask all of our hosts on our hosts to plan music specials. So maybe there are artist-specific, maybe they're a topic, maybe it's just kind of a fun idea that they want to explore more. And we found our listeners really enjoy that. They tune in for the specials, and then they're also getting the fun drive pitching. So, you know, that drives donations during those times, which is really great. We have a really, like so many people have said, our music programming on Saturdays is especially strong. It kind of flows really well throughout the day, and it's something that we like to promote and talk about a lot, especially during our fun drives. And it's really a highlight of our music programming. We also have some great live broadcasts and local partnerships that we've established with venues, other local nonprofits, there's a range of these things that we do, and we just find that that's a really great way for us to connect with more members of our community, off of the airwaves, not just on the airwaves. And, during COVID, we had to, like some others have mentioned, change our training process a bit, move a bunch of it online. And that's actually, we learned some things from that worked well. And so now we have a more streamlined process for training our DJs. It used to be a little bit more haphazard because we have a studio in Boulder and in Denver. But now anyone who's doing the training process, they first attend a volunteer orientation generally on Zoom. And then those interested in music DJ training will attend a virtual first session with me. And then from there, people who continue with the process, submit demos and things like that, will go either through the process with me in Boulder or with our program manager in Denver. And so far it's been pretty successful. And we've been able to get a good amount of people on the air, even with COVID restrictions and things like that. So that's all I really prepared for today. Just some kind of things that have helped with my work and in the music department, and I'm very happy to take questions.
Thank you, Indra. I think somebody asked whether you could share your a sample of your newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll make sure that gets sent along.
Yeah, send it to Stephanie, and we can make that available.
Yeah.
Sharon, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. That was wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the dedication to live DJs and the personal connection that really happens there. So we're trying to do that at our station also. Let's see. My question was, when you all do the training, it's kind of a similar question I had last time. But when you all have people go through the orientation and then the training, does it happen that someone doesn't work out or you don't think that their show is going to be a good fit for your station or something like that? And how do you handle that in that case?
Yeah, we're very open here at KGNU because I think others have expressed that, you know, it's rare that someone actually makes it through all the steps to be on the air. And usually people will kind of weed themselves out if they're not really ready for it. You know, I like to believe I came to KGNU actually with no radio experience, and they still hired me as a music director, which I really appreciate because they knew I had the skills and interest and that I could do it, and they believed in me, and I do and I can do it. And that's something I really emphasize at the start of any of my trainings, is that if you're here and you have interest, you can do it. So I really try to work with people as much as they can to as much as I can to make sure that anyone at any level or, you know, ability on the mic or all these things, that we work with them to kind of train them up. And some people need much longer during those training sessions than others, and some people are ready to go right away. One thing that we have in place is we have a Restless Morning show, which is every morning from 3 to 5:30 on weekdays and then a bit longer on the weekends. And that's kind of our training ground for new DJs. So some, you know, some people, they're really not comfortable on the mic and they need a whole year doing that show every couple weeks to feel comfortable to finally move into something else. And we give them that time. Some people, it's after a few shows, they're ready to go into a more primetime spot. If there's someone that's not really working out, it's usually them that will kind of remove themselves from the process rather than me having to tell them to do it. And I think that individualized attention to people and their skill sets and where they're at, it may take a little bit more time, but for me, I find I get more good DJs that way, and so it's worth it.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I think I've become a little jaded in the past 10 years doing this and used to be very open and now I'm realizing I have to, you know, there's just certain things. You have to think about the audience. For me, it's been harder to start thinking, okay, we have to think about the audience more than the individual DJ. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And we just have so few time slots that we can't just let everybody on air now. So that's the difficult part for me is trying to, you know, figure out how to do that in a peaceful way, not hurt anyone's feelings and that kind of stuff. But thank you very much for your advice. Wonderful presentation. Also, one more quick question, if you don't mind, is about the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And you said you get out new music to the DJs through that newsletter that they can use and download at home. Yes. What system do you use to do that?
So I have a couple wonderful dedicated volunteers here at KGNU who take all of the physical CD submissions and digital ones and transform them into physical CDs and digital files for me every single week. And then I take those files, I put them in a Dropbox folder and I share it. But I have to say without those two volunteers, I really don't think I'd be able to do this. And I really had to find one of them was doing this before I even started, and he's very detail-oriented and does a great job. You really need to have a structured system for how you're going to enter music and things like that, I think, for this type of thing to be successful. But once it's in place, the returns are, like, really fantastic, I think.
Indra, do you have an HD channel?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think so. I honestly don't know. I'm sorry.
No problem. Jim, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'm just curious, and this would be a question to everybody. I remember listening to Kenny Freeman give his brief on Audience Engine a couple of years ago. And I'm just wondering how you all are and how you're doing. And Indra, thanks a lot. It was really fascinating to listen to you. It's really terrific to listen to everybody. How are you utilizing social media to boost audience out there?
That's an interesting question and interesting that you mentioned that. Actually, currently KGNU is part of the Pointer Digital Transformation Initiative, which maybe some other stations here were involved in cohort one of that. But they are working with community stations like ours to help transform some part of our digital presence. And we have actually honed in on social media and Facebook in particular to see how can we create better posts and engage more people with the eventual idea that we're bringing them down this audience funnel into becoming a member and a lifetime listener of ours. You know, we've tried a bunch of different things and we're still working on it, but I think some of the takeaways from me from just the initial work on this is like, the posts need to be fun and engaging. Like taking a whole big block of text and throwing it on a post is not going to get people engaged with your station. You have to have high quality graphics. I've been experimenting with putting up just some fun questions for people to answer, and those posts have gotten like unbelievably high engagement. And we're just trying to get people connected to us through Facebook so that hopefully they start noticing more of what we're doing. Come see a live show that's on our presents calendar, tune into a show that piques their interest, whatever, and then eventually get them to become members. It's a little like hard to track, But that's kind of where we are with that at KGNU specifically.
Sybil, did you want to ask a question before we move on?
Yeah, I put that into the chat. I mean, we look for so many ways to try to share music with people when they weren't able to come in and do a show here, but most of the promoters don't want you to send stuff directly to DJs that they can download themselves. You know, they will say, here's singles, here you can share it, or here you can, we'll put them on our mailing list. But they, you know, we don't have a private cloud. So if it's out there publicly, or, you know, you have, you know, numerous DJs that can download stuff, I mean, are they okay with that, or?
I have not received any complaints, because.
But do they know you're doing it?
Well, I don't know if they know, but what they do know is that their music's getting played because of it. And the way I see it in this digital age, if you want a song, you can get it from any source, anywhere.
Mostly
true. Music is free these days, unfortunately. And so, to me, for promoters, like, I don't want you to share this. It doesn't make sense to me. It's like, these are DJs who are going to play your music on the air, get it heard by other people, and get it out there. And we really focus, I think that problem, the few times I have encountered it is with larger artists from bigger mm-hmm. labels. And we don't really work with that music very much here at KGNU. It's really about underrepresented independent artists who are looking for anyone to listen to their music. So I think that's how we get around it a little bit too.
That'll make a big difference, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thank
like
you.
Beyonce is, people are not going to be like, share this to all your DJs. Like, everyone can hear it anyway, but you know what I mean?
Well, but I mean, you know, yeah, but the same is going to be true of, you know, Guided by Voices, who's, they're not a huge, like, Beyonce, you know, or, I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot, a big range of artists. I'm just saying, if people want to do this, they might want to be careful about just sending it all out or, you know, putting it out that way. But you know, we should be focusing on local and independent music, and we do. And as you say, it's not a problem for that. And yeah, they're not supposed to share. Well, it's not that it's public, but it's, they are volunteer staff, but there's just so many volunteers, you know, it's like, okay, so there's 100 people now that have access to all of this music to just download it and have it at home. And yeah, they're instructed to not share it with anyone else, but what if they do put it up somewhere? So anyway, it's not worth a risk for us. So anyway, it is.
Felix, did you have a question?
So many, Andrew, thank you so much. That's really amazing presentation. I really appreciate everything that you mentioned and raised a lot of questions. Quickly, just on social media, we've just reformatted, back in June, and we're now Talk in the Morning, Music in the Afternoon. And so we've only recently, we used to be only, live DJs, doing the music, for the most part, and they were responsible basically for bringing in their own music. Our own library hadn't grown or changed in far too long. So we're only recently doing work to do acquisition. So at some point I would love, Ursula, if anybody else wants to organize a session on music acquisition, because we're really not on a lot of lists. We're only just sort of starting to, expand our, library, mostly digital. We don't get a lot of physical media at this point, but I'd love to change that, especially when it comes to DJs. I feel like CDs are really handy. On social media, I'll just say that we've also been really trying to spin that up. Generally speaking, when it comes to like building a younger audience, we're trying to do two things at the same time. One is build up our digital presence and make sure that people can get us online, but also so we're trying to, the way that vinyl is cool again, we want radio to be cool again. So we're trying to make that, do both of those things at the same time, support people online and make it cool to have a radio again and educate people around that. Yeah, I really like the idea of the newsletter. We're doing a weekly newsletter. It's not so focused on the music, and the way the music gets imported into our automation system is not necessarily that friendly for all of the jocks to use. So having a way for different people to use it is, I think, really exciting. And I'd love to, yeah, again, I just love to hear more about acquisition and reporting. I mean, we use Spinatron. I don't know if labels are watching that or in
yeah,
the same way.
I've heard they are. And some DJ, we don't use Spinatron. We experimented it for a little while, but we actually have an in-house system that we use that works a little bit better for us. But they do pay attention to that, and we'll reach out to programmers sometimes.
Cool.
And I find if you reach out to a label and say, hey, we love this, we want to play it, they'll send you the download code in a heartbeat. So
you write labels directly.
I really recommend. You can directly reach out to artists and labels through that site and get titles that you want. So it's a little time consuming, but sometimes if you reach out to a label, they'll put you on their distribution list from there. And that's how I've gotten a lot of things that I actually want to receive. I receive a lot of digital submissions that I don't want to receive. So I'm sure lots of people can relate to that. So it's nice to have those more targeted ones. And Bandcamp has been a huge resource for me in that way.
Cool. And do you just have kind of a form email that you then customize a little bit depending on the artist? Just like, oh, here's who KGNU is and
yeah.
We love your art.
Literally, I'm like, hey, I am music director at KGNU in Boulder and Denver. We love this album, or we love your releases. Would it be possible to be added to your distribution list? And, you know, I get a pretty high response rate from that platform, which is great. I think the way Bandcamp is set up to be so, like, community-minded really works with community radio, too.